Hello, and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here today with Dr. Herb Slavin, and as always, lots of information to help you avoid the pitfalls of illness and doing it all with natural substances supportive of overall well-being. What do you think of that, Dr. Slavin?
Well, I'll tell you what I think.
I was thinking you would.
You know, a lot of the radio shows are always selling something because they need to generate revenue to, you know, pay for the expenses of doing a program. And that's, you know, all well and good, except that a lot of what's required for good health is it doesn't have to be purchased. Not purchased beyond the food you're buying, because that's still the most important thing. You have to buy the right food. I mean, the supplements and all the other stuff are good add-ons, but if you don't start with the right food, I don't think the add-ons could counteract the diet you're having.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. Certainly, supplementing is a very, very good idea. Supplementing with a very focused purpose so that you're not taking 100 different supplements and not necessarily achieving the health support that you're looking for. You want very good quality guidance and focus on supplements that are going to do the job, but that foundation is absolutely high quality food choices.
Now, I got some feedback from a local ER nurse to my office, and she asked me, how come we never see any of your patients in the ER? I said, because they don't need the hospital. And, you know, that's like, you know, all the other doctors, you know, their patients are always going to the ER and going getting admitted to the hospital. So what's the difference? And I think I know what the difference is. And I'm going to use an analogy here, and then we'll apply it to how we practice healthcare. The analogy is, if let's say you have a boat, and you're going through an area of the ocean where the water level is low, and you got to be careful about the hidden coral reefs so you don't hit them. How would you do that? Now, you can have electronic instrumentation that can help you do that, or you can have a towboat that knows the way and can steer you in the right direction so you don't run into the reef. But lacking all that guidance, there's a very good chance you're going to hit a reef. And the analogy with healthcare is, you need guidance to avoid the reefs or the health challenges or the diseases that we all potentially face. And that guidance is proper testing and seeing the physician on a regular basis that knows how to guide you without resorting to medications. Because medications is not guidance. You know, medication is saying, oh, you've hit the reef, and just take this until you bounce off the next reef, and then we'll give you another medication. So that's the problem with medication. It's, you know, the healthcare providers are allowing you to hit these reefs all the time, and they just give you another medication. So that's the point. You want someone to be able to guide you to avoid the reefs so you don't need all that medication.
It's very interesting because I see people all the time who are on a very long list of medications from a variety of different practitioners. So they have their primary care practitioner, they have their endocrinologist, they have their cardiologist. Unfortunately, they may also have a nephrologist and an immunologist. And unfortunately, with all of those different medications and all of those brilliant minds diagnosing the function of their different organs, they feel terrible. They don't have any quality of life. And the truth of the matter is, those medications, as you said, just cover up a danger situation, a dangerous situation, hitting the rocks, sending those patients to the hospitals. And the overall outcome is very, very sad for most of these patients. So, Dr. Slavin, I know that you and I have different solutions. Where would you start with the patient who has been to the emergency room numerous times and you pick the cause that's sending them to the emergency room?
Well, no, if you're in the emergency room, you've already drowned or capsized on the reefs because, I mean, you've got
your
a serious problem.
Your boat is leaking.
You come into the office with a complaint for a physician, you've also hit a reef because, you know, you've become aware of something. The idea is to...
Slow leak in your
to, you know, well, the ideal way to do things is to see the physician before you have a complaint. That doesn't mean you're not healthy. I mean, that doesn't mean you're not sick. You can have lots of things wrong with you and not be aware of it, and that's where testing comes in. The problem with healthcare, the way it's been set up in this country, it all starts with the chief complaint. So if you don't have a complaint when you go into the doctor, he doesn't know where to begin.
Okay. The way healthcare has been set up in this country is literally a merry-go-round where, yes, you have a complaint, you go see the doctor runs tests, the tests come back, and the doctor says, okay, the results of these tests show us that you need XXXO medication pharmaceutical. And you take that pharmaceutical, they come back to the doctor 6 weeks later, and you retest. What's the outcome with that retest, Dr. Slavin?
Well, it depends. Sometimes the medication, depending what tests they did, let's give an example. Let's say they gave you, your blood pressure was high, and they didn't rewrite the map for you. They just gave you a drug to lower the blood pressure. You know, you're going to keep hitting that reef. You're just not going to feel it the same way because they covered it up with a medication.
Okay, so I think that's an excellent example. Your blood pressure, when retested, is acceptable to the medical practitioner who has been guiding you through these tests. Now, I talk to clients about this all the time. Blood pressure lowering medications have been in the marketplace 70, 80 years. Is that a fair... I remember my parents taking them.
Yeah, I think
I was a little kid.
I think so. The original blood pressure medication was a diuretic, a water pill.
Okay. Now, that original blood pressure lowering medication was meant to reduce a risk of heart attack or stroke. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, because there was a correlation made between people who were getting strokes and heart attacks, and a lot of them seem to have had a history of high blood pressure.
Okay, and so with that goal in mind that you are going to reduce your risk of a heart attack or stroke, here, take this blood pressure lowering medication. We monitor you, your blood pressure is in acceptable levels, and my observation has been heart attack and stroke rates have not declined.
That's true, and that's where we get into the concept of surrogate endpoints. And what that means is, if, like we just said, before the introduction of medication, they saw an association between people who were getting heart attacks and strokes, and many of them having a history of high blood pressure, and they said, well, it must be connected. High blood pressure must be causing the stroke or heart attack. So they said, okay, let's lower the blood pressure. So they lower the blood pressure. Let me just complete that analogy. When they looked at people who were not having heart attacks and strokes, their blood pressure seems to be in the normal range. So that's how they said, okay, let's lower the blood pressure into the normal range, and therefore we should get the same outcome. No heart attacks and strokes, because the people who had normally low blood pressure didn't have heart attacks and strokes. But that's not what we found.
Unfortunately, that is not what we found, and so we're jumping back on the merry-go-round. And here's the merry-go-round: cholesterol-lowering drugs. You take the cholesterol-lowering drug, and you will find that the level of your cholesterol is brought down into a so-called acceptable range. Okay, Dr. Slavin, the cholesterol-lowering drugs were introduced into the marketplace 25 years ago. Along with, I see so many people taking the cholesterol-lowering drug and the blood pressure-lowering drug, and those two drugs together theoretically should have lowered the mortality rates for heart attack and stroke, and essentially the development of heart disease. And unfortunately, that has not occurred. So 70, 80 years of blood pressure lowering with pharmaceuticals, 25 years of cholesterol lowering with statin class drugs, and here we are back in the emergency room.
That's correct, and you can almost make the same analogy across the board, where they...
I was ready to keep going.
Diabetes. I mean, any disease where you're prescribing a drug, they want to put you into the category with a drug of people that are naturally in that category and still expect you to have the same outcomes, and that's where the problem is. Now, but there's another topic I wanted to address today also. And had to do with cancer treatments. And the first article that you could probably check on is, it was in the USA Today, and they were stating that, and this was the headline, that, you know, when you use chemotherapy in the end stages of cancer, it doesn't help. So, I mean, why would you want to do that anyway? I mean, these people are, I used to say to, you know, I'm not a fan of chemotherapy, and I used to say to patients and doctors, if I were talking to them, I said, as long as that patient's breathing, you'll give them chemo. And that's what they do.
And it's true.
And sometimes they get the chemo after they stop breathing because nobody shut it off in time. You know, it's motivated by the fact that that's what they get paid for. You get what you pay for, and so as long as they pay for chemotherapy, people are going to get chemotherapy. But here's what it said. A new study finds that half of cancer patients received chemotherapy in their final months of life, even though the therapy, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and other grueling side effects, had no chance of curing them.
More than 20 years ago, I went to Cancer Treatment Centers of America for a three-day seminar, adjuvant nutrition in cancer treatment, and there were experts from around the world making their presentations there. Linus Pauling was one of the presenters, and the bottom line of what they had to say was, unfortunately, many times the basis of the cancer patient's death came because that cancer patient had been given overdoses and even acceptable level doses of chemotherapy. Very, very disappointing to hear that these experts around the world have a unanimous perspective that chemotherapy was an unsuccessful treatment at best, a contributing factor to the death of cancer patients at worst.
And my observation with over the years with patients who have gone for chemotherapy is that maybe they last 2 years. You know, they get their diagnosis, they go for chemo, and 2 years later they're not living. Has that been your observation, Janet?
Absolutely. And it's very, very interesting because I hear from clients who have decided to opt out of that mainstream approach, that mainstream merry-go-round, and they talk about observing people diagnosed with cancer after their original diagnosis those friends and acquaintances choosing to go the mainstream cancer treatment approach, and that 2 and 3 years later, they are no longer surviving.